Good afternoon. My name is Lisa, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Center for American Progress on Afghanistan Government. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Emmerling, you may begin the conference.
Thank you, Lisa. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for calling in. My name is Susie Emmerling, and I'm here at the Center for American Progress. First, I'd like to remind you all that this call will be recorded and posted on our website. If you'd like access to the audio recording or contact one of our experts or see the report, I can be reached at 202-481-8224 or at semmerling@americanprogress.org. Thanks for calling in today to discuss our new report that assesses the structure of the Afghan government and its implications for U.S. policy. Joining us is Senator Al Franken, along with report authors Caroline Wadhams and Colin Cookman, and CAP Senior Fellow Brian Katulis. They will discuss our report's findings and other critical issues for American policy toward the Karzai government and Afghanistan. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Brian Katulis.
Great. Thanks, Susie. It's Brian Katulis at the Center for American Progress. It's a real honor for us to have Senator Al Franken of Minnesota with us be with us as we launch a new report on Afghan governance, which I think will be a key focus of President Hamid Karzai's visits. I first met Senator Franken in 2007, and we talked regularly, mostly about Iraq and national security, and he has a propensity to ask all of the tough questions about what we're doing and whether the policy we have is the correct one. He visited Afghanistan recently in January, earlier this year. So we're going to hear from Senator Franken for a few minutes, and then we'll turn it over to the report co-author Caroline Wadhams, who's speaking with us from Saudi Arabia, about the main findings of the report. Senator Franken?
Thank you, Brian. Thank you all for joining us. I was honored to be asked by the Center for American Progress to, I guess, tee up their new report on civilian governance in Afghanistan and on the challenges that we face in that area. The first part of the report is a useful catalog and analysis of the most relevant institutions of Afghan governance at all levels, and I think will be a very valuable contribution to the public understanding and the discussion of our Afghanistan policy, both in the public and in Congress. More generally, with President Karzai in town and the upcoming vote on the supplemental, we need the kind of in-depth discussion that this report provides. And whether you agree with all of it or not, the report will be an important contribution to the open and free-ranging public discussion that we need in our efforts in Afghanistan if we're going to be successful. It's important to stimulate discussion and debate to make our efforts in Afghanistan work. Since my brief visit to Afghanistan and Pakistan this past January, I went with Armed Services Chair Levin. I've been convinced both that the Obama administration has chosen the best course that it could and that we need to focus more intensively on civilian governance in Afghanistan. I was very impressed by what I saw of the new strategic direction of the Obama administration and that they've taken in Afghanistan. I was particularly impressed by how much our brave men and women were internalizing counterinsurgency strategy. Spent a lot of time also with General McChrystal and with our ambassador. Traveling with Senator Levin, we learned a lot about our efforts to train and partner with the Afghan National Security Forces, met with General Caldwell there. All this is crucially important. But at the same time, while I was there, I continually asked, where is the corresponding effort on the civilian side? You know, there were a lot of Americans from the State Department there who were going to the South and going all over to participate or to the Afghans that we were interested in the governance side, not just the security side. But I kept wondering, where are the Afghan officials from Kabul out in the field with their American international counterparts, just, you know, as the Afghan soldiers are partnering with international forces? And the CAP report elaborates on those questions in depth, and that's something I think is very important. From the time of that CODEL, I've made clear publicly that I'll be supporting the president's supplemental request and won't vote against it. At the same time, that doesn't mean I'm not going to raise questions. It's important for Congress to perform oversight and demand accountability of the administration, not for political reasons, not in order to undermine the administration's efforts in Afghanistan, but exactly to make those efforts better. In addition to providing useful information on the structures of Afghan governance, the report provides a number of recommendations for how we can try harder at getting civilian governance right in Afghanistan. These recommendations should play an important role in the public debate, regardless of whether I or others agree with each one of them. For instance, the report talks about how important it is to help the Afghan government generate revenue so it can start to stand on its own independent of the international community. We have to work hard to do that. For instance, the U.S. Geological Survey has indicated that Afghanistan, in fact, has major mineral resources. Are we doing enough to ensure that the Afghan government can capitalize on those resources? What about the construction industry and trade and transit? All in addition to agriculture, when I was there, USDA Secretary Vilsack was there, there's a tremendous potential for Afghan farmers to grow stuff other than poppies and to profit from it. There's much else important. I recommend it to all of you as a contribution to the analysis of Afghan governance capacity and the challenges that we face. Now, I guess I'm going to turn it over to Caroline, if you're still there in Saudi Arabia, and Caroline and Colin Cookman are the co-authors of the report. Go ahead, Caroline.
Thanks, Senator Franken. Before I describe the report, I'd just like to turn it to Brian, who has a couple of remarks, and then call. Then I will describe the report and then we'll take questions from there.
Great. Well, just briefly, because Colin and Caroline are the co-authors of this report, and I do strongly recommend it because it gets to that central question of what does the United States aim to leave behind in Afghanistan. When you add up the $20 billion of requests that President Obama submitted in February of this year to what we've spent already on the reconstruction effort in Afghanistan, it will get us close to $70 billion, which is double what was spent in post-war Germany from 1946 to 1952, inflation adjusted. And making sure that this additional tranche of money actually achieves better results than were achieved in the first several years of the effort there, I think is central to the task. And I think Colin and Caroline do an excellent job raising questions about essentially what is the desirable end state in Afghanistan and how is that sustainable, and a stress on sustainability. So the report, Governance in Afghanistan, Looking Ahead to What We Leave Behind, I think takes us beyond, I think, some of the more immediate questions to the longer term and to the broader question, which I think needs greater clarity of how will this war end, and how will it end in a way that leaves Afghanistan better off than when we arrived. So, Caroline, go ahead, go through the summary reports.
Before I start, I hope that during the question and answer period, we both Colin and I can respond. I'm going to just discuss the report very quickly, but Colin deserves the vast majority of the credit, for this excellent report, and I want to make sure that he shows off how much he knows. Let me just talk about the big picture the two overall messages of this report. The first is that clearly stability in Afghanistan will not just depend on military victories, but the creation of a minimally effective government, one that has legitimacy, a responsiveness to Afghans, and transparency, and that is self-sustaining, will be absolutely essential. If the U.S. and NATO hope to withdraw their military forces and keep them out without the country descending into civil war and regional proxy fighting, political and economic reforms must occur. And Colin and I wanted to make sure in this report that we're not just describing the structures in place, but that we're showing how important the governance side of this, as Senator Rankin discussed, is to stability long-term. The second message is that our current approach to Afghanistan, while President Obama has done an amazing job in placing much greater emphasis on governance in Afghanistan, Colin and I worry that we may not be creating a sustainable state over the mid to long term. We may not be laying down the foundation for the Afghan government to become less dependent on foreign aid and foreign troops, and that our focus often is on short-term stabilization above and beyond political and economic reforms that will ultimately determine our long-term security. And so we divide it into three parts. I'm going to very quickly go through them. The first is just a description of all of the different bodies of governance in Afghanistan, which Colin and I felt had not been clearly outlined in the public debate. So Obama's talked a lot about improving governance, about battling corruption, about all of these, about supporting local governance. Colin and I highlight and describe in detail what the structures are, the provincial, district, municipal level, and what the problems with those structures are, and why the status quo is not sustainable. The bottom line, and I'm not going to go through all of those different elements because it would take too long, but the bottom line is that the Karzai government continues to operate on a highly centralized patronage model in which power and resources are channeled through his personal and political allies. Case in point is that he appoints more than 1,000 positions countrywide on all levels of government. Most everything in the government leads back to Karzai. And currently, the Afghan population has few means of expressing their dissent in influencing the policy direction of their country. And the system lacks connection, rules, checks and balances necessary to make Afghan leaders accountable to their population. And it obviously erodes legitimacy and invites corruption and rent seeking. And where local government bodies do exist, and there are some, like the elected provincial development councils, they often lack budget authority, clear roles and responsibilities, and don't have capacity to be able to provide services to Afghans. There are numerous government bodies. Things have been established, but they continue to be ineffective. The second section of the report discusses how the way that we are providing international aid to Afghanistan can often create complications for the creation of a minimally effective Afghan government. We can sometimes undermine the legitimacy and the strength of the Afghan government that we know we want to create, but the way that we're giving international aid is sometimes not facilitating that. As part of that, the Afghan government remains highly, heavily reliant on international support for almost 80% of its budget. Despite the fact that most of our aid goes outside the government, they continue to be highly dependent on us. And clearly, that's understandable because they, you know, they've just been through 30 years of war. They're still trying to strengthen themselves, but we have to recognize what that heavy dependence on us means. We are their key constituency, the international community, not Afghans. And Afghans continue to be passive bystanders rather than active contributors to government decision-making and implementation. And the bottom line is that the fundamental contract between the state and its people is made through taxation and the resulting provision of services. And we are not assisting right now in trying to create that connection between Afghans and their government. We're not creating a pathway to make that happen. Without this link, it's difficult to create representative, accountable, and effective service delivery. And the other issue as part of this, not only are they highly reliant on us, but the way that we give aid, so much of it actually goes outside of the government. And it's clearly, again, it's understandable because of corruption issues, our concern about its capacity. But we, again, have to recognize what that means. And we may be undermining the legitimacy of the Afghan government by consistently going around those government structures and not trying to go through things like the trust funds, which go through a Afghan-managed budget process but are monitored by the international community. One of the ways that you begin reducing dependence on the international community, and Senator Franken mentioned this, is by creating, by generating domestic revenues. This isn't just through taxation, although taxation is part of it. But we need to think about what is the pathway that we create so that the Afghan government can begin to generate its own revenues. And there are, as Senator Franken mentioned, places where that can occur, whether it's through minerals or other manners, through other means. The final section of the report, and then I'm going to wrap up because I'm going too long, but the final section is another concern that we have about the way that we're approaching Afghanistan, and that is in the way that we are, in our efforts to create short-term stability, we may be undermining the long-term stability, undermining the state itself. We have a contradictory approach. On one hand, we want to support the government of Afghanistan. On the other hand, we go around it. We bypass the government in favor of local power brokers, favored actors, local militias, figures outside of the government who provide us with intelligence, security assistance, and aid project implementation. And there are two parts that we find especially worrying. And one is the militarization of our aid, whether that's through the provincial reconstruction teams or SERP funds, the Commander Emergency Response Funds, or the Afghanistan Social Outreach Program, which we can discuss. The other concern that we have is our continued support for local militias in Afghanistan. Again, the emphasis is on short-term stability, but that may actually be hurting us in the long run. In terms of recommendations, I'm just very quickly I'll quickly state there. We have five here. The first is provide a clarity of purpose. We believe that the Al-Qaeda frame doesn't enlighten us about what we're really trying to achieve and that we need to be much more clear about what kind of state we want to create there. The second is focusing on sustainability and a pathway for reducing our dependency. The third is we have to put a much greater effort on putting Afghans in the lead. The fourth is pushing for an institutionalized rather than a personalized decentralization of power. Yes, we need to go to the subnational level. We need to decentralize, but we don't do it outside of government structures. We shouldn't be doing it through a local militia or a individual power broker. We should do it through supporting the local governing institutions. And then finally, we need to have a greater focus on demilitarizing development assistance, and I'll leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa. Can we move to Q&A now?
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question,
please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Please press star, then the number 1 if you would like to ask a question. Your first question comes from the line of David Korn.
Hello, is everyone there?
Yeah.
Hi,
hey, David.
Thanks, Senator. In looking at the report, and I haven't read the whole thing, but I've read the first few pages, you know, I see again and again the big theme seems to be that the administration just hasn't clearly defined what it wants to achieve fully in Afghanistan. And when I asked White House officials about this, they go on about their goal being dismantle, disrupt, and defeat al-Qaeda. There seems to be a gap between what they're saying and what the report says, and in between that gap is, you know, $80-100 billion, whatever, being spent per year. What do you think, and I'll put this to the senator and anyone else, the administration has to do to show a clearly defined target in terms of an end state and a goal for the program?
That's a great question, David. I think what that means from my perspective is that we need to have a comprehensive sense of what a stable Afghanistan looks like and what it needs. And, you know, only then can we properly plan to help Afghanistan get there. Now, when I was, you know, I spent a couple days with General McChrystal, and he outlined, you know, the way to get there, which is a counterinsurgency doctrine, which is, and we are beginning to see, you know, the beginning of the battles there in Marja, and which has met with some success, but also some signs that aren't as good as what we'd like. And we think it's probably because of the exact problems that are underlined in this report. You know, clear, hold, and build is what the counterinsurgency doctrine is, and the point is to you know, the Taliban is not very popular in Afghanistan. It's more popular in southern Afghanistan than the rest of the country. But the Taliban intimidate people. So the point here is to clear and hold and build. And so when you clear and hold, you make people feel safe. But the building part is building, not just building sewers or not building buildings, but building governance. And that was my concern when I was there, that we're not building, that the civil servants in, that I, you know, I was going, where are the Afghan civil servants that are coming down here? And to some extent, they weren't coming down. I mean, I was in Kandahar, and they weren't coming because the stability wasn't there enough for them to feel safe. And we had more American civil servants seeming to go down there. I think that the end state is to create enough confidence in the Afghan government that they'll have a stable government there, and that people can feel confident that they are going to be protected from the Taliban. And we're not going to get there unless we, you know, aside from just military victories and being able to hold, we have to be able to build. And building means establishing governance. I mean, but I really had that feeling from McChrystal, and I had that feeling from everybody in America, every American there, and every member of the coalition there, it wasn't just to keep al-Qaeda on the run or the Taliban on the run. It was to establish, you know, and he, McChrystal had targeted a certain, like, 80 districts in the country. So, to me, what this report does is underline sort of the question that I had there, which was, what is the Afghan government doing to establish civil governance there to make people feel like they have an investment in the Afghan government and that they feel secure enough to work on behalf of a country that's taking this war over. Does that answer your question, David, or do you have...
Well, I mean, I guess in part, but I still don't, in terms of setting goals, I understand that kind of in the process of what you'd like to see happen, but it still seems that if the authors of the report, and if you agree with this yourself as well, if you don't see the administration setting forward a clear objective on this front, then you know, what does that say about the expenditure of blood and treasure?
I actually saw a clarity of purpose.
Okay.
When I was there. Now, the authors can speak to this by maybe the clarity of purpose that I'm speaking of is more of how to get to the end state as opposed to what the end state looks like. Do either of you want to speak to that?
Sure. So, Colin, do you want to talk?
Sure. This is Colin Cookman. I mean, just speaking to your point, I think this is something the administration is working towards. They had the conference most recently, I believe, in Estonia. They have this session and then looking forward to the Kabul conference in July. They are looking to sort of prepare a clearer picture and looking to get clear commitments from the Afghan government in terms of what sorts of – basically, what are we – after the clearing and holding and building, what are we transferring to? So it is something the administration, I think, is working on, but certainly I think – I mean, one concern I have in writing this report and taking the example of the conference in Estonia, much of the discussion of transferring responsibility to the Afghan government in parts of the country where it would be maybe more secure is that much of the discussion focused on the security situation as being sort of the criteria by which the government would be judged to us being able to transfer to the government or not? And I think just some of the issues that Caroline mentioned in this report in terms of sort of the ability of the Afghan people to access their government and the ability of that government to sustain itself from sort of domestic sources. That's something that I'm in, hopefully in these sessions here in Washington and in the future conferences, hoping to see a little more clarity from both Karzai and from the administration.
Yeah, and if
and,
I could
–
go ahead, Caroline.
So just one quick thing. I guess I would just say that, what we highlight in terms of, sometimes the contradictory approaches to Afghanistan and the militarization of our, a lot of this is understandable. It's the Obama administration has inherited a very, very difficult set of issues. The Afghan government at all levels is very, very weak. And they know that they want to show quick results to the American people. And they want to show that that violence has been reduced quickly. And so they're trying to create quick impact results. So they go to the local power brokers or they support the local militias. And what we're just trying to highlight is, yes, we understand the attractiveness of that option, of that short-term option, but ultimately that will not actually create stability. And so, the political situation is so fragmented in Afghanistan after 30 years of civil war. The tribal structure has largely been destroyed in many parts of the country. The Obama administration is trying to maneuver in a highly, highly complicated situation. So, we're trying to highlight, not blame them for these challenges.
Yeah, and if I could add, and just really quickly, this is Brian Katulis. If you look at the regional stabilization strategy the Obama administration put out earlier this year, in my view, it does not, and I think the authors share this, fundamentally answer some of these questions and some of the questions, direct questions we've asked of the administration. Estimated cost to completion, one in particular, a general estimate of how many Afghan civilian government personnel will be needed at the various levels of Afghan institutions in order to make them viable? I can't get an answer to that direct question, and maybe it's unknowable given that this is a organic work in progress. And as Caroline and Colin mentioned, it's a very difficult situation. But we do know, you know, they want to get 170,000 plus Afghan National Army personnel. We do know that they want to get Afghan National Police up to about 134,000. I think what this report highlights is that there's still not enough precision about the various positions that need to be filled in the Afghan civilian governance at the national, provincial, and local level.
Thank you. Next question, please, Lisa.
Your next question comes from the line of Roger Runningen.
Thanks a lot. One of the biggest questions I have is in connection with Karzai being here in Washington. What specifically are the U.S. asks on corruption in the peace plans that Karzai plans later this month? Is the U.S. satisfied that Karzai isn't barreling ahead too fast on reconciliation with the Taliban?
Should I take that?
Sure.
Who wants to answer that?
Colin.
Well, I can speak to a little bit on the corruption
and
issue.
This is who?
Sorry, this is Colin Cookman.
Thank you.
One of the co-authors. I mean, certainly the administration has sought to press Karzai on corruption for some clear commitments in terms of prosecuting officials. From what I've read, the status of Karzai's brother is not going to be raised. But they have. Karzai has in his inauguration after his reelection and since then made statements that he would be strengthening the high office of oversight, establishing new sort of organizations within the attorney general's office, looking to sort of show some. So I think what the administration is looking now, a few months on, is to see are these organizations actually being given sort of the political support they need to do their jobs, since that's been. That's been an issue with past anti-corruption efforts, and I think it's still an unanswered question with these new institutions.
So, is that something that he will be pressing him on there on the meeting Wednesday?
I would assume that will be a topic for conversation. Yes.
All right.
Go
ahead.
Sorry, this is Caroline Waters. I mean, I think one of the challenges right now is that I think the Obama administration is trying to salvage its relationship to a certain extent with President Karzai. So I think it might be kind of softer language, at least what we see publicly. So there's going to be, I think what President Obama is going to be doing probably is reaffirming his support for President Karzai and showing that, you know, there we have a partnership and just trying to sort of heal the relationship. And I'm sure behind closed doors he's going to be pushing some of these governance issues in terms of, as Colin mentioned, the corruption, especially the corruption. But, you know, I don't know how much. I think a lot of it is just going to be sort of symbolic overtures of partnership more than very specific requests for action. At least I don't think we'll see those specific requests publicly.
Okay. We shouldn't look for too much out of this four-day conference then.
I mean, I don't know what Brian thinks or Colin, but my sense is I'm not sure we're going to see a ton of movement on any of these issues.
Because why?
Yeah. I mean, basically just what I stated before, I think it's just going to be, I think it's, there's a lot has happened over the past couple of months in terms of the relationship with Karzai. I mean, things have not gone well. And so everything we see in the press, at least, is that there's a sense that this relationship has to heal again and that President Karzai has not responded well to what he has perceived as public rebuking, and I think some, and he's felt humiliated and has lashed out, and it hasn't been constructive. And so I think there's going to be a softer approach by the Obama administration. That's just my sense of it. But, you know, behind closed doors, they're clearly worried about some of the corruption issues. They've raised it again and again, and I'm sure some of that will be happening. But it's going to be, I think it's going to be kind of happy, probably some happy, you know, we're friend talk in public.
Thank you. Go ahead, Senator.
Well, I was going to say that the second part of your question, which was about there's been talk about trying to reintegrate some lower members of the Taliban fighting force. I mean, to some extent, paralleling what happened in Iraq, and some reconciliation with the top ranks. And that, I think, is something that I want to hear what Karzai has to say, whether we're making any progress there at all. And because I think that's absolutely key. And I know that when I was there, that Karzai was saying that he had a lot of confidence that that reintegration and reconciliation were very, very not just possible but likely. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to know where he feels our progress is there. I think that's something that if I were in those meetings, I'd be asking about.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can we take the next question, please, Lisa?
Your next question comes from the line of Susan Cornwell.
Yes, hello. Senator Franken, I think you talked about a sustainable state in Afghanistan. I know the report talks about that, measuring U.S. progress toward a sustainable Afghan state. And I'm wondering, and I guess it's for you, Senator, but for all of you, is that what you think should be the goal of U.S. policy, is a sustainable Afghan state? And you know, if so, do you think that's attainable at a cost that the United States is willing to pay? And how long do you think it could last? I think there was some comment by President Karzai several months ago. He talked about something like 10 or 15 years worth of help from the United States. And perhaps he also had in mind that it would take that long to set up this kind of sustainability where you actually do have Afghans in the lead. I mean, Senator Franken, you said, you know, you wondered where are the Afghans. I just wonder how long you think it will take before they would be there. Is all of this achievable at a cost that the U.S. is willing to pay?
Well, those are all the key questions. You know, one of the things that the president did in the West Point speech was set a date, July 2011, for sort of a drawdown of the surge. And one of the things that he was criticized from both sides on that, from all sides on that date, but one of the things it did seem to do, talking to General Caldwell, who's in charge of training the Afghan military and the Afghan police, is it did increase recruitment. So that was a signal to Afghans that we're turning the war over to them. And I think as far as that aspect of it is, as far as military and police, that we've seen some success there. And the military there is a very well-respected institution, maybe the most respected. I'm talking about the Afghan army is the most respected institution there from every source that we got. So I think that there is both a sense of urgency in this, but it requires some patience. And I think that's hard for Americans. And I don't blame Americans for being impatient. And but what I saw was very, very palpable progress on the military and on even on the police side. But what I was personally dissatisfied with or asking about the most was on the governance side. And I think that once we, the theory here is that we will establish security, and that from that security, can we build up a local governance, a national governance. This is not a country that's had basically a strong national, a central government, to say the least. And there have been warlords and different tribal factions that have provided security and governance in different parts of the country. So once we establish security, and that's also not a given, but once we do that, the question is, will the Afghans provide the security so that we can, our presence there will be mainly one of trying to establish the governance.
Thank you, Senator. And we actually have time for just one more question at this point, Lisa.
And your final question comes from the line of Amer Madani.
Thank you, Amer. You noted earlier that the Obama administration wants pushing gently and aggressively for Karzai to do a better job fighting corruption, and that also Karzai made declarations in his inauguration about greater oversight. But what sort of struck me in a quick read of your report is the total lack of transparency that the Karzai government is still showing. And one thing that sort of jumped out was you're noting on the of the how toothless the Afghan control and audit office has been. And I was wondering for both Carolyn and Colin and both and as well as Senator Franken, if you want to weigh in on this, your assessment on how things have gone on that lane since the November election or re-election of Karzai. Have we gone backwards? And secondarily, are there any specific steps that the administration should take this week to push Karzai and its ministers that are going to be in town to make some agencies and oversight levers actually start working?
Caroline,
Colin.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think part of the issue that we raise in the report is that a lot of these anti-corruption efforts, a big reason why it's the challenge is that there are a lot of systemic sort of issues that make tackling corruption very hard, chief among them being the fact that many institutions of the Afghan government at both the national and subnational level don't have sort of a direct responsibility to the people of Afghanistan whose lives their policies impact. So organizations like the central, like the audit office that you mentioned, the fact that the president, the fact that the head of the CAO is not subject to parliamentary confirmation, is not really required to make any of his findings public. Those are things that I think if the Obama administration really prioritized it, potentially the international community collectively could push for those kinds of reforms. For example, the Special Advisory Board on Senior Appointments. Back in 2008, there was a real concerted push by the international community to make this board function, to vet appointments, senior appointments, like it's supposed to. This is a commitment that the Afghan government itself made back in 2006. But the question really was, is anybody holding them to it? And for quite a while, they weren't being held to it, and there was sort of a period of real international attention to this that resulted in the board operating and vetting, but it seems to kind of fallen by the wayside, and now the focus is elsewhere. So I think the challenge for the administration being, while acknowledging that they have some serious sort of short-term security concerns, also keeping the focus on these commitments and really making the Afghan government follow through on them. I'm assuming that's going to be a big focus of these talks and the talks in Kabul.
Thank you, Colin. Lisa, we need to wrap up there. So thank you all so much for calling in today. Thank you, Senator Franken, for joining us on this call. If any of you need access to the audio or need to follow up for questions, I can be reached at 202-481-8224. Thank you all very much. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.